We were continuing, even though it is after Shavuos, and until now we were killing two birds with one stone, and speaking about the milas of Torah, and connecting it to Shavuos, but we're going to continue with that subject and continue it for another week or two, and completion of this Mishnah, because the Mishnah says that the world stands on three things: Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim. And we were discussing the first, Torah, how the world exists or stands on Torah, and we gave already quite a few different aspects of it. I want to finish up a few more aspects and then go on to how Avoda, Tefillah, Karbonos keeps the world going and why the world stands on that, and eventually on Chesed, Gemilus Chasodim. And when we finish that, we will begin the next Mishnah in Mirtz Hashem, which should take us another few weeks. Okay, another aspect of how Torah, the world stands on Torah, another aspect of the benefits of Torah is that im ein Torah ein derech eretz. Now, without Torah, there can't be real derech eretz. Now, the Mishnah says the opposite too: im ein derech eretz ein Torah. And we've spoken about that many times. That if a person doesn't have the basic midos tovos, the basic character traits of a human being, then there's no way he can have Torah. He can have something that it looks like Torah, that appears to be Torah, but real Torah he can't have unless he has at least the basic midos tovos of a human being. That is 100% true. In addition, we said that unless a person has good character, he will not be able to hold on to the Torah too long. It will exist by him temporarily, but not permanently. So, even though that's true, and that Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah, Derech Eretz comes before Torah, but once a person has those basic Midos Tovos, and then he gets Torah, the Torah enables him to have higher levels, more refined levels of character and good personality traits and Derech Eretz way beyond what a person would have if he didn't have Torah. So Torah is enabled by Midos Tovos, and Torah enables a person to go on and have much more refined Midos Tovos. And those Midos cause the world to exist in one very simple way and in a much more deeper way. Start with the simple way. Good character, Derech Eretz, enables people to live together in peace and harmony. And without Midos Tovos, it's very difficult for people to live together. People who don't have Midos Tovos are very hard to be part of a functioning society. And that is one of the purpose of Derech Eretz, of Midos Tovos, to be able to live together with other people, to function together with other people. And that is the essence of shalom. Shalom does not mean peace in the sense that there are no fights, no wars, everybody does the same thing, nobody complains, nobody argues with anybody else, live and let live, do your own thing. That's not shalom. I'll prove it to you. The Pasuk says that David HaMelech could not build the Beis HaMikdash. He wanted to, but he was told by the Navi that he couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash, and the reason was, ki yodecha domi moleu, your hands are bloodied and full of the blood of all the wars that you made. The Beis HaMikdash is a house of shalom, of peace, and a person who was involved in so many wars and so much bloodshed can't build the house of peace. That's a simple meaning, simple understanding. But the following Medrash makes that impossible to be the real meaning. The Medrash says like this, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told David HaMelech, if you build the Beis HaMikdash, it will be eternal. And I can't have an eternal Beis HaMikdash at this point in history. Because I need the option that if the Jewish people sin, that I destroy the Beis HaMikdash as their punishment, because otherwise I'm going to have to destroy them. If I don't have something to shock them into repentance, even in the long run, then I have no choice but to punish them what they deserve. If I have the option of destroying the Beis HaMikdash, that will be shocking enough to shock them back onto the right path eventually. So therefore, and that's what Chazal say, that God took out his anger on wood and stones of the Beis HaMikdash and not on the Jewish people. Doesn't mean that God was frustrated and he had to get his anger out somehow. It means that because of justice, either the Jewish people deserve to be destroyed, or they deserve to be given another chance, if there was possible another chance. The only other chance was to destroy the Beis HaMikdash and to jolt them back on the right path. If that option didn't exist, then justice would have demanded that they be destroyed. So God said, I can't let you build the Beis HaMikdash, because you will build an eternal Beis HaMikdash, and I can't have an eternal Beis HaMikdash. Your son Shlomo will not be able to build an eternal Beis HaMikdash. He'll build a Beis HaMikdash that can be destroyed. I need that option. Now that seems to be in total disagreement with the first thing I told you. First thing I told you was that David HaMelech couldn't build a Beis HaMikdash because his hands were sullied with blood. So, but he could build an eternal Beis HaMikdash? The answer is yes. Shalom does not mean peace or the absence of war or fight or whatever. Shalom means shlemus. Shalom means perfection. Perfection in this world exists only by God. Only God is perfect. God created an imperfect world, and perfection by anything but God is the group effort, the team effort of many things working together, and not only many things, but even opposite things. For instance, Shamayim, heaven, is the working together of fire and water to make heaven. Opposites have to, we can work together in harmony and make heaven. In the physical world, we have the same thing. Salt, right, is sodium chloride. Either one by themselves are poison. If you take sodium by itself, it's a poison. You take chloride by itself, it's a poison. But when they mix together, they form a salt, which is, some people say, also a poison. But in any case, in taken in moderation, it is the spice of life. Excuse the pun. In any case, so salt is a positive thing. So Shalom means perfection, and perfection means things working together towards a common goal. And therefore, in order to achieve shalom, sometimes you have to fight for it. And you have to destroy those people or those things that would destroy the harmony in the world. And therefore, David HaMelech, who did he fight? He didn't go out and fight tzaddikim. He went and fought Rishoyim, wicked people who wanted to destroy the harmony of the world, the perfection of the world, who wanted to promote the destruction of the world. And therefore, to promote the harmony and perfection of the world, you have to get rid of those people sometimes. The only way to do it sometimes is through war. So David HaMelech shed the blood of people who would destroy the world and destroy the perfection of the world. So by doing that, he aggressively brought harmony and perfection to the world. So David HaMelech Shalom was an aggressive Shalom. That kind of Shalom can build a eternal Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech lived in a time where there were no wars. He only had a passive shalom, passive perfection, but not aggressive and active. That kind of passive shalom can only build a Beis HaMikdash that is not eternal. So there's no contradiction between the two. Because if you understand that shalom does not mean just peace, peace, quiet, serenity, that is not shalom. People think that shalom bias is a home where nobody ever argues, nobody ever raises their voice, everything is calm, serene, quiet. That does not describe shalom bias, that describes a cemetery. Shalom bias can be where people disagree, and even disagree vociferously, and argue, with one stipulation, that they are all concerned what is best for all of us, and what can I do to contribute to the good of the welfare and benefit and good of all of us. And there can be different opinion. What's good for all of us? But I'm not only looking out for myself, I'm looking out for everyone. And I can have, everybody can have different opinions. What's good for everyone? And they can argue about it. But if their intention is, in the end, to come out what's good for everyone, that's shalom bias. That's the perfection of a home. Even if people argue. And you can have a home where nobody ever argues and everybody's only concerned about themselves. Shalom alei nafshi. Not interested in interacting with anybody else. As long as it's good for me, is fine. That's not shalom bias. That's a house with a lot of people living under one roof, but there's no shalom, there's no home. There's just a bunch of individuals living under one roof. Yeah.
Because Yaakov was having the shalom,
the question would be great if that's what Chazal said, but it doesn't say that. It says, Bikesh Yaakov leshe b'shalva. Okay, next. The so let's speak a little bit more about this. And therefore, it says that the entire purpose of Torah, why was the Torah given? In order to bring shalom to the world. The Rambam brings it down in Hilchos Chanukah in the end, that if it's a question of having Neiris Shabbos or Neiris Chanukah, Neiris Shabbos comes first, because Neiris Shabbos is because of shalom bias. Shalom bias meaning that people shouldn't trip over each other in the dark. They should be able to live harmoniously together and not step on each other's toes. And therefore, even though Neiris Chanukah is Pirsumei Nisa, and Pirsumei Nisa takes precedence over most things, it doesn't take precedence over shalom bias, because the entire purpose the Torah was given is to bring shalom to the world. And it's based on a pasuk, it's Gemara. Drachecha darchei Noam, the ways of Torah are pleasant, v'chol nesivoseha shalom, all of its paths lead to shalom. That is the goal. That is what Torah leads to, shalom. And therefore, talmidei chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. And again, shalom doesn't necessarily mean peace, quiet, serenity. It means harmony that leads to perfection, because perfection cannot come from any one thing. Perfection is only a group effort in this world. Where do we see this idea also? This idea of shalom is the idea of harmony, things working together. That is the difference between machlokes l'shem shamayim and machlokes shalom l'shem shamayim. You can have an argument that's l'shem shamayim, and it says sofa l'shkayim, that will eventually, in the end, persevere and remain. And a machlokes shalom l'shem shamayim ain't sofa l'shkayim. It can't remain. Now, what does that mean? We don't want arguments to remain, right? Some say tongue-in-cheek that where people argue when they know that they're not doing it l'shem shamayim, it's possible that the argument will be resolved. Where people think they're doing it l'shem shamayim, it'll never be resolved. But in any case, the real meaning is the following. says the Meiri, that machlokes l'shem shamayim means people are arguing together with each other. Machlokes shalol l'shem shamayim is where they're arguing against each other, meaning the following. Hillel and Shammai had one goal in life. What is the truth? We want to know the truth so we can do it. And one had his opinion, the other one had their opinion. They wanted to know what the truth was. They wanted to know what was right. They didn't care if they were right or the other one was right. But in order to come to the truth and to know what's right, sometimes you have to argue about it, because I think this is what's right. You think differently. Let's argue it out. And you'll try to prove to me that you're right. I'll try to prove to you that I'm right. And in the end, one of us will admit that they were wrong and that the other one is right, and we'll both be happy because now we'll know what's right. So in the end, we'll both win because we both got what we want. We got the truth. It didn't make a difference to Hillel whether they were the ones who were right or Shammai was the one who was right. They just wanted to know what was right. So they argued together with each other in order to ascertain what was true and what was right. That machlokes, both sides will win. Because no matter who's right, they both got what they wanted, the truth. But a machlokes shelo l'shem shamayim is each side wants to win. They don't really care what's right or wrong, what's true or false. The main thing is, I want to be right. And therefore only one can win. Only one can be right. So they're not arguing together with each other. They're arguing against each other. Each one is trying to negate the other one so they'll remain the one who's right. Truth isn't important. It's I should be right. So I'm going to try to destroy your side. You're going to try to destroy my side. And one of us will remain standing in the end, but only one of us. So it's not sofa l'shkayim. The machlokes won't remain. Only one side will remain. So that is the idea again, that machlokes l'shem shamayim is really peace, harmony, because that's how you reach shlemus, by different things working together, even though they may be opposites, to come to perfection, to come to what is true. And that applies, we've said this many times, so I'm not going to go into great detail, but just to mention it, that applies on every strata of existence. The world was created, every individual thing, says the Sfarno, was good. Vayar Elokim Kito. But when all the things in the world were finished and they worked together to make a functioning universe, then it was very good. Because the universe is better than the sum of its parts. Each part is good in itself, it has a function. But it's only when the things work together towards one common goal, and now there's a functioning universe with everything contributing its part, then it's very good. And on the spiritual, that's on the physical level. On the social level, if everybody in the world would be doctors, we'd have a very healthy world, but who would take out the garbage? And if everybody were garbage men, we'd have a very clean world, but who would take care of the sick? So you need a world where they're all different functions. Doctors and lawyers and businessmen and garbage men, everybody. And everybody contributes their part towards the common good, and in that way there can be a functioning world. That is shalom. That's shlemus. That's perfection. And if anybody's missing, there's something missing. And the same thing goes on the spiritual level. On the spiritual level, we pride ourselves that we receive the Torah with Taryag mitzvahs, 613 mitzvahs. But that's a myth. There's no individual in this world who ever could keep Taryag mitzvahs. Because if you're a Kohen, you have mitzvahs that no Levi or Yisrael has. But if you're a Levi, you have mitzvahs that no Kohen or Yisrael has. And if you're a Yisrael, you have certain mitzvahs that no Kohen or Levi has. Pidyon HaBen is an example of a mitzvah that only applies to a regular Jew. A Kohen or Levi could never fulfill that mitzvah from the fathers as a father. They're the recipient. The Kohen is the recipient, but he doesn't have the mitzvah on his child. Men have mitzvahs that no woman could ever do. There are mitzvahs that are only for men, that a woman can't possibly do them. And there are mitzvahs that are only for women. At least in my lifetime, I'm hoping that no man will ever bring the sacrifice after childbirth. That is a woman's mitzvah. Okay? So, unless you are a Kohen Levi Yisrael, man and woman wrapped into one, which today may be possible, but under normal circumstances was not, you can't have Tariq mitzvahs. There's no such thing as 613 mitzvahs. So how did we receive a Torah? Who? We received the Torah ki'ish echad b'lev echad. We received the Torah as one conglomerate. Everybody working together. Everybody contributes their part towards the common good. And the mitzvahs I have supplement and complement the mitzvahs you have. And together we have 613 mitzvahs. That is on the spiritual level. So everybody has their part, and that's what it says, Yeshishim ribui osios la Torah, the way we explained it. There are 600,000 letters that have to be added to the written Torah to make the Torah complete. Those are the 600,000 root souls of the Jewish people. There aren't 600,000 letters in the Torah. That's how it's normally understood. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah, and every letter corresponds to another root soul of the Jewish people. There are more than 600,000 Jews. But all of us share a cluster of souls with others. There are 600,000 clusters of souls. So many people belong to one cluster. They have their own soul. It's like a cluster of grapes. Each cluster is made up of many individual grapes, individual souls, but the cluster is a cluster to itself. There are 600,000 clusters and many, many grapes, individual souls belong to that cluster. And there aren't, so the simple meaning of that Zohar is, Yesh, Shishim, Ribui, Osios, La Torah, spells Yisrael. Yesh is Yud, Shishim, Shin, Ribui, Resh, Osios, Aleph, La Torah, spells Yisrael. So there are 600,000 letters in the Torah. Every Jew, every cluster of neshamas has a letter. There's only one problem. There aren't 600,000 letters in the Torah. There's only 304,588 letters in the Torah. That is quite a difference between 600,000 and 304,000. So where do the other letters go? And there are many, many answers to that question. Example, some say you have to count the Targum. Targum was given when the Torah was given. So that almost doubles the amount of letters. So now it is 600,000 letters. Some say that you have to count the spaces between the letters too, because those are also considered part of the Torah. It's not only the black ink, it's the white spaces that are also part of the configuration of the Torah. Also, every letter is made up of more than one letter, many letters. An Aleph is made up of a Vav and a Yud, and an upside down Vav, and a Shin is made up of a Yud and a Vav and a Zion put together. So you have to look at the combinations of the letters that make up the letters, and it comes out to 600,000 or more. So those are some of the answers, but I don't think there's any question, because it doesn't say that. It doesn't say there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, because that would be Yeshishim Ribui Osios Ba Torah. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. But it says Yeshishim Ribui Osios La Torah. There are 600,000 letters to the Torah, which means, in my estimation, that there are 304,000 written letters in the Torah. But that Torah is not complete unless you add another 600,000 letters that are the souls of the Jewish people. And that echoes another Zohar. The Zohar says, Yisrael, the Oraisa, the Kudsh Brich Uchadu, that the Jewish people and the Torah and the Rabban Shem are one. So if you take the Jewish people away from the Torah, there is no Torah. So in order for the Torah to be complete, you have to add another 600,000 letters to the written Torah, which is the neshamas of Klal Yisrael. Therefore, just like in the written Torah, every letter is unique. Every letter is important. If every letter is not there, or it's not written properly, or it's not in its proper place, the Torah is not a Torah. So too, in order for the Torah of the Jewish people to be complete, everybody has their place, their specific letter, where they're supposed to be, who's supposed to be before them, who's supposed to be after them, and what sefer they are, in what sedra they are, and so on, what pasuk, everybody has their place. Everybody has their role to play, and the Jewish people are complete, and the Torah is complete, only if everybody is fulfilling their role. And therefore, I have a responsibility to help other people, to teach them, to guide them, to rebuke them, because it makes a difference to me, because my Torah is possible where I am if you're not part of it, if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So that is also the idea of the Torah came into this world to bring perfection to the world, to teach each person what their contribution is towards society. And only when people know who they are and what they are can they function and work together with other people. This idea that there are all different kinds of people, and that is what makes the world perfect. Because everybody be the same, then the perfection would come from only one person, because everybody's the same. And that can't be. Only God is perfect. So God created, just like in the physical world, many different things, and sometimes opposite things. Fire, water. But if they work together, there is a functioning world. He created many different functions in this world. And if people work together, then there's a functioning society. And he created many, many different aspects of Torah that if people contribute their specific aspect, then the Torah brings perfection to the world. And the Torah teaches the person what his role is, what his contribution is. And that is enables him to work together with other people. Now, let me mention one more point before we go into this idea, therefore, of how Torah, learning Torah specifically, makes more shalom, and this, according to this idea, in the world. The Gemara says that if you see three things in a dream, those three things are signs that shalom will come into your life. What are they? A bird, a river, and a pot. Now, I could have said a kettle, but because that's the name of a book by Rabbi Feldman. And what I'm going to tell you has nothing to do with that book. It's a different shot. In the book is very nice. You read it. It has to do with Shalom Bias. But what I'm going to tell you is a different idea completely. Why these three things are a sign of Shalom. Basically, what disrupts Shalom in the world? Three other things. Three things disrupt Shalom. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which one day we'll get to. The Mishnah says, Hakina v'hataiva v'hakavod motzien es ha'odim min ha'olam. Jealousy and lust, desire, and honor take a person out of the world. Now, there are all different commentaries, which we'll see when we get there, which world it takes you out of. The next world, this world. But I think it has another meaning. It means it takes you out of society. You can't be a functioning member of society if you are jealous, if you are lustful, or if you're looking for covet. Why not? Let's start with kina, jealousy. Why does jealousy prevent a person from being a productive member of society? First, you have to understand what jealousy is. Okay, the Torah prohibits being jealous of someone else in the last of the Aseres HaDibros, Lo Sachmod. Don't covet. Okay? Don't want what somebody else has. Okay? So, question is, the Torah uses that verb, do not want, do not covet somebody else's thing, and it applies it to a few different things. It says, Lo Sachmod, Shoro, Vechamoro, right? Aishes, what's Lo Sachmod, Aishes Riecho, thank you. Aishes Riecho, Veshoro, Vechamoro, Vechola Shelo Riecho. Okay. So Torah says, don't covet your neighbor's wife or his donkey. Now, it's a verb. It represents a feeling. Don't feel towards your neighbor's wife like you feel towards your neighbor's donkey. L'chora, they're not the same feeling. Wanting your neighbor's wife and wanting your neighbor's donkey on the surface seem not to be the same feeling, unless there is something very right about the donkey, or very wrong about the wife, or very sick about the guy. Okay? Unless one of those things is true, you can't want your neighbor's wife the same way you want your neighbor's donkey. So why did the Torah put them together? They're not the same feeling. Second question. The Aseres HaDibros, the first five are more spiritual, between man and God, and the last five are more physical, between man and man. There is a correlation between the first of the first five and the first of the second five. The second and so on. They go together. Four of them are very simple to understand. The fifth is a little difficult. The first one is, believe in God. I am God. And the first of the second five is, don't murder. Why? Man is created in God's image. When you believe in God, you intensify God's image in the world. When you don't murder people, you intensify God's physical image, kibiyachol, in the world. When you murder people, you decrease God's image. When you don't believe in God, you decrease His image. So they go together. One is more spiritual, one physical. Second, don't commit idolatry. The second, on the second luchos, don't commit adultery. Idolatry is the Jewish people going after strange gods. Adultery is a woman going after strange men who are not her husband. On a physical level, a woman going after someone who's not her husband, the same thing on a spiritual level of the Jewish people going after strange gods. God is kibiyachol, our husband. So that is a correlation. Third, don't take God's name in vain, don't steal. The physical sin is stealing. How do you usually cover up for your stealing? You swear falsely that you didn't steal. So the swearing is the more spiritual side of the sin, and the stealing is the more physical side of the sin. Keep the Shabbos and don't bear false witness. Shabbos is a testimony that God created the world. Someone who doesn't keep Shabbos is bearing false witness in a spiritual sense. Don't bear false witness in a physical sense. Same thing. The last one is, honor your father and mother, don't covet. Here, it's hard to see a connection. What does honoring your father and mother have to do with not coveting? And lastly, the Ibn Ezra asks, how is it possible for the Torah to command us not to want something else, somebody else's thing? The Torah can tell you, don't take it. But don't want it. It's a natural feeling. I see something I like, I want it. So how can I control myself? Torah can say, okay, you want it, don't take it. But don't want it? How can you control what you want? I see something nice, I want it. The answer to all the questions is the following. The Gemara says, Rekev on the Pasuk in Mishle, Rekev Atzamos Kina, that jealousy rots your bones. Now you can understand that literally, that when you're jealous of somebody, it eats you up alive. But there's a deeper meaning. The Gemara says on that pasuk, what you want you won't get, and what you have will be taken away from you. You won't get what you want if you are jealous of other people, and what you have will be taken away from you. Now that seems to be a punishment. It's not. It's just a natural result of what jealousy is. Jealousy is a feeling that I'm not happy being me. I only focus in on someone else. I want to be them. What they have, what they are, who they are, that's what's important. What I am is not important. Jealousy comes from a low self-esteem, from not recognizing who you are and what you are, and feeling that you can only be important if you're somebody else. And therefore, the feeling of jealousy is, I'm not happy being me, I want to be him. And in order to be him, I need everything he has. I want his wife and his donkey and his house, because that's what makes somebody important, him, not me. So, it's not that I want the wife because I'm lusting after her, I want the donkey because it's strong. Those are separate feelings, that's not jealousy. Jealousy, losachmod, means I want it because it's his. And it's the same feeling, whether it's his wife or his donkey. I want it basically not for its merits. I want it because it's his and I want to be him. What he has is important to me. What I have isn't important. And therefore, jealousy rots your bones. Atzamos is the essence of the person. If you don't recognize how important your essence is and only focus in on somebody else's essence and feel that that would make me important, that what I am is nothing, then you destroy your essence. And what you want, you won't get, because you can't be somebody else. And what you have will atrophy, because of you won't use it, you won't recognize it, you won't access it and bring it out, you'll lose it. It'll be taken away from you. So it's a natural result of what jealousy is. Jealousy is not focusing in on who you are and what you are and appreciating your strengths and appreciating your character traits and your qualities, but only somebody else. I want to be them. And therefore, it goes together with Kibud Av V'Em. Who can honor their parent? Somebody who's happy who they are. But if you're not happy with who you are, then you can't possibly honor your parents because they made you who you are. So, and it's the greatest disrespect to a parent not to be happy with who you are. They made you who you are. So if you're not happy with who you are, where's your complaint? With your parents. That's why psychiatrists always blame the parents for people who aren't happy with who they are. But it's not the case. The person himself should be happy with who he is. In any case, so that is the idea of jealousy is not recognizing who you are and what you are and only seeing importance in somebody else. Therefore, says the Ibn Ezra, if a person would, the Ibn Ezra says that nobody is jealous of something he knows is outside of his realm. Something that he knows he can't have, right? Somebody doesn't covet his mother. He knows he's not going to ever marry his mother. Right? It's not in the realm of possibility. Somebody doesn't covet the king's daughter. He knows out of his realm. The example I like to give, which along the same lines, but it's something easier to relate to. If you have a doctor and a shoemaker who are neighbors, the doctor gets the state-of-the-art ultrasound machine, and the shoemaker gets a state-of-the-art sewing machine. Do you think the doctor is going to be jealous of the shoemaker sewing machine? What's he in a sewing machine for? Doesn't sew up his patients with a sewing machine. If he does, not going to be a doctor too long. And do you think that the shoemaker is going to be jealous of the doctor's ultrasound machine? What does he need an ultrasound machine for? He knows what's in his shoes, feet. What in the world does he need an ultrasound machine? It's not his realm. So there's no jealousy. But let another doctor get a better ultrasound machine, or another shoemaker get a better sewing machine, then there's jealousy. If everybody would realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives out the roles of each person, every person has a purpose here. There are a letter in that Torah, and there are a different letter, and a different word, and a different place. And a person would appreciate his role in this world and realize that somebody else's role can't be his. God gave him this role, not something else. Then there's no place for jealousy. Then he wouldn't begin to be jealous. He'd realize this is not my realm. He's the doctor, I'm the shoemaker. I'm the shoemaker, he's the doctor. Not my role. It's not my realm. But because people think that you get whatever you want, it's a free-for-all, then they're jealous of each other. But if they realize that everybody has their role in this world to play, and they have to contribute what they have to do, therefore, a person who is a Baal Kina, he's a jealous person, can't be a productive member of society. He doesn't appreciate what he has to offer, and he only wants to be somebody else, and he can't be somebody else. In order to be a productive member of society, you have to appreciate your contribution and contribute it, and work together with other people and appreciate what somebody else has that you benefit. They complement and supplement you, and you complement and supplement them. But if you're a jealous person, you won't reach that. Taiva, people are lustful. So there's a bottom line in Taiva. The bottom line is, what's in it for me? I'm not going to do it unless I get something out of it. So you can't be a productive member of society if you're only looking what's good for you. And covet, the same thing. I'm only going to do it if I get the covet. I get the credit. Somebody else gets the credit, I'm not interested. But you can't work together in society if you're looking for the covet for yourself. These three things in the dream combat each of those things. A river has tremendous power. You can run a hydroelectric plant and light up a whole city with electric power, with water power. But the river is only positive if it stays within its boundaries. If it goes out of its boundaries, it's a flood. Realize that every person has tremendous power. But if you try to go out of your realm and try to get something else, somebody else's, then you're a flood. The bird is very flexible. Kaved is from the word kaved. I consider myself heavy. I'm not moving for anybody. I'm not yielding to anybody. I'm not flexible. I occupy a space and everybody can walk around me. I get the kaved. Kaved comes from kaved, heavy. A bird is very light and flexible. You want to be on the ground, the bird will go in the tree. You want to be in the tree, the bird will go on the ground. The bird counteracts kaved. And the pot counteracts taiva. Because like we said, taiva is what's in it for me. Bottom line. If I don't do it unless I get something out of it. Look at a pot. If you have fire and water, there's a lot of water and a little bit of fire. You pour the water on the fire, puts out the fire. They can't exist together. If it's a lot of fire and a little bit of water, the fire will boil away the water. Fire and water can't exist together. Either the fire puts out the water or the water puts out the fire. But if you have a pot and you put the water in the fire, in the pot, and you put the pot on the fire, the pot will enable the fire and water to work together to make cooking. What does the pot get out of it? Burnt. Black. Sometimes it's kedai to be a catalyst and help people work together, even if all you get out of it is being burnt. That's what the pot teaches you. So the pot counteracts taiva, the bird counteracts kaved, and the river counteracts kina. Those are the things that take a person out of society and don't permit there to be shalom and shlemus in the world. And these three things represent the antithesis of them, which enable shalom, peace, and harmony to come into the world. Basically, therefore, we still need one more part, so we'll save that for next week. We'll start with the idea of, so how does Torah enable a person to feel that being part of society? What prevents people? Why don't we live in a world where people understand this and work together? Why is everybody working against everybody else, and this one's no good, and that one's no good, and everybody only cares about themselves? Why is that the case? That we will discuss in Mirzah Hashem next week.